All rise. The Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Herndon presiding.
All right, good afternoon. Are both sides ready to proceed?
Yes.
Okay. Justice Pickering was unable to be with us today. She's going to be listening to the arguments later, and so she'll be participating in our deliberations as well. And this, Ms. Armini, on behalf of Ms. Fiore, how much time do you wish to retain for rebuttal?
3 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay, you can get started whenever you're ready. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Paola Armini, and I represent Judge Michelle Fiore. The commission's jurisdiction only extends to conduct that occurred during judicial service. That is undisputed. It cannot be expanded by reframing pre-bench actions as a continuing monetary obligation. Judge Fiore's alleged conduct occurred between July 2019 and January of 2020. That predates her assumption of office in December of 2022, and therefore falls outside of the jurisdiction of the commission. The commission continues to move the goalpost and manipulate the rules in an attempt to discipline Judge Fiore. First, the actions were predicated on the criminal action, and when that case ceased to desist, the commission pivoted, alleging for the first time in 10 months that Judge Fiore violated the generic judicial canon of 1.2 and was now a substantial threat, neither of which she is. This was the exact conduct that the Whitehead Court warned about. The Constitution does not contemplate that the commission define judicial misconduct based on their own ad hoc judgments about what conduct is desirable. Judges could be disciplined without any fair notice that their actions are wrongful. They could be subjected to discipline based on whatever notions of propriety might be harbored by that particular commission during their shifting membership at any given time. The commission is acting outside of their jurisdiction when it seeks to sanction judicial behavior that has not been prescribed definitively by any of the rules. Here, we're not talking about judicial performance. We're talking about money that needs to be paid back or alleged to be paid back that was received before Judge Fiore was a judge. There is no canon on finances or money being returned. Here, there is no legal obligation to return any of the property or money. So with no legal obligation, the commission turns to utilize 1.2 as notice of conduct. But the commission cannot get around that the purported money that they're alleging is still owed wasn't without discussing the underlying facts of the case. And there leads to the jurisdictional halt. The funds that were requested were before she took office. The money was received before she took office. All these actions occurred years before she became a judge and years before she was subject to the judicial canons.
Ms. Armini, does NRS 1.4402 apply to Judge Fiore?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, 1.440
subsection 2.
Your Honor, I think that is, yes, I do think it applies when it talks or on or after, but I think even if the court doesn't believe that specific statute applies, the same jurisdictional time limits, if you will, are also found in other NRSs, such as NRS 1.428, which talks about conduct, disciplining conduct, when a judge was serving in that position or a person was serving in that position.
Is that the definitional section you're referring to?
Sorry, Your Honor, the section
1.428, was that the?
Yes, Your Honor, that is the statute that I'm referring to.
Okay.
So the holding of this court should be that Judge Fiore's conduct during the period of the alleged indictment is outside the scope of the commission because she did not take office until 2022. And under the facts of this case, her failure while in office to return funds she obtained before entering the office does not constitute a violation of the rules of judicial conduct. And I was going to ask at this point, I know Judge Lee already, Justice Lee already asked a question, if the court had any questions of me.
Let me follow up, if I could, on Justice Lee's question, because maybe I misunderstood. Subsection 2 of 1.440 says if a judge is licensed to practice law in this state, and then it bifurcates before office and after office, meaning the state bar may have jurisdiction or judicial discipline may have jurisdiction. Subsection 1 just talks about judicial discipline having exclusive jurisdiction subject to subsection 2. So arguably, since Judge Fiore isn't a licensed to practice law, subsection 2 would not apply to her, correct? So that judicial discipline would have exclusive jurisdiction?
Well, Your Honor, I think you have to look at that section, and can, even if you want to find that that section doesn't apply to her, I think when you look at the totality of the Nevada Revised statutes, the procedural rules, all in conjunction, it does indicate that traditionally speaking, you don't take into, they cannot discipline for conduct pre-bench. And that's where I rely on NRS 1.428, which talks about if former judges' conduct is at issue for purposes of discipline, then the Judicial Commission can actually go back and discipline them for conduct that occurred while they were on the bench. I think also the Judicial Discipline Commission has been very public about their position that they do not discipline conduct prior to a judge taking the bench. They have repeatedly said
Ms. Armeni, those comments made in the context of a judge who in fact is a licensed attorney?
Yes, Your Honor. Those were made in that context.
Okay.
Go ahead. What in 1.428 suggests that a non-attorney judge could only be disciplined for conduct while they are in office? Because I'm just not seeing anything here.
A non-attorney
judge.
Okay.
Okay, so if it's an attorney judge under 1.4402, if it's conduct prior to them becoming a judge, that would be under the province of the state bar, right? Because we have licensing procedures and then there's bar supervision, none of which exists for somebody who was not a lawyer prior to becoming a judge. So you're saying that 1.428 supports your position that judicial discipline can only look at conduct of a non-attorney judge while they're in office, but I don't see anything in here that suggests that.
Well, I think looking at all of them in totality, it ends up, there is no fair notice that a judge that, there's no fair notice in any of the statutes that suggests to somebody that is a non-attorney, if you will, that takes the bench, that any conduct that they did previously would then later be held, they could be disciplined for in dealing with the judicial canons. The judicial canons make very clear that they discipline judges, not in their function as a judge, not prior to becoming a judge. The canons, everything speaks to a judge's misconduct, a judge's, their ability to discipline a judge in that capacity. And so here we don't have that. We don't have a conduct that is disciplinary, that can be disciplined.
Well, because Ms. Armeni, had Judge Fiore not received the president's pardon and gone on and had a judgment of conviction entered based on the jury verdict in the federal case, do you dispute that she could have been disciplined based on that criminal conviction?
Yes. No, I don't discipline. I don't disagree with you. I think that there are
even though
canons,
the criminal conviction would have been based on the transactions you're talking about that occurred before she was a judge.
But the rules specifically talk about a criminal conviction, Your Honor. And so when they talk about judicial misconduct, it specifically talks about a conviction. And that we don't have that here. We don't have fair notice of just conduct before you become a judge. I do agree if there was a conviction. I think the rules are clear and provide fair notice to somebody like Judge Fiore that that conduct could be disciplined.
So there is jurisdiction to discipline based on a post-judicial position conviction, even if it's based on pre-judicial position conduct?
I think the statute is clear, or the rule is clear, that if there is a conviction while you are sitting as a judge, that is subject to discipline. Yes, Your Honor.
Out of curiosity, is the state foreclosed at this point from bringing its own charges?
Criminally, Your Honor?
Yes.
I believe so. I believe the statute of limitations has ran on both the criminal cases. I believe the statute of limitations have run also on any civil action. And I think it is important to note that this complaint that came before the commission was based on the commission asking for this complaint to be written. This is not a situation where these donors are, frankly, they never filed a civil suit. They're not even the ones that initiated the criminal investigation. They didn't initiate the complaint here. And these donors are all affluent people in the Nevada community. We're talking about lawyers, David Chesnoff, Jay Brown, Governor Lombardo. I mean, these are folks that are highly sophisticated and are very familiar with the process, that if they wanted to challenge this, they certainly can. But instead, this complaint came from the commission alleging that this money needed to be paid.
But if we're just talking about jurisdiction at this point, because there's been no, you know, there's a complaint, but there's been no, we're in the investigative phase at this point. Wouldn't the commission have jurisdiction over Ms. Fiore under 1.440 subsection 1, which is kind of a blanket state of jurisdiction? Because subsection 2 arguably doesn't apply to her.
Your Honor, I think we go back to reading the Nevada revised rules in conjunction and looking at NRS 1.428. I think we also look at the procedural rules themselves that allow the Judicial Commission to dismiss a complaint if they don't have jurisdiction over the person or the conduct. Those are the procedural rules 10.5 that allow that. And again, it has to be even under 10.4, they have to initiate, it has to be judicial misconduct of a judge. And we don't get there without looking at this conduct that happened we're talking years prior. She was not even a candidate. She wasn't subject to the judicial canons. Frankly, she may have been subject to other ethical.
Why should we take up a writ petition at this stage when all we have is a complaint triggering an investigation? There isn't even a formal statement of charges, and we don't know if there ever will be one.
So the writ, and to make this maybe concise, because I know there are three appeals and it's a lot. The same factual basis for the suspension, which is an appeal 90650, and the complaint, appeal 90810, they rely on the same factual basis. So in turn, we rely on the same argument that they don't have jurisdiction in either one. So I think looking at our second appeal, our second appeal is 90650. That second appeal, we briefed the jurisdictional issue pretty lengthy. The writ, Your Honor, I feel like we won't get anywhere. And what I mean by that is, if you send us back down and we go through this process, we're still dealing with the issue of jurisdiction. And so it is clear that the commission thinks they have jurisdiction, because under their own procedural, well, a couple reasons. One is they're the ones that implemented the complaint, so clearly they must have thought. It didn't come from a third party, it came from the commission themselves. They did not dismiss the complaint based on jurisdiction, which they're allowed to do under their own procedural rules. So our issue of jurisdiction will not change, and we'll be right back up here after that hearing arguing the same thing, whether they have jurisdiction or not. So that is why sending us back down, there aren't any facts to be developed here that would help this court make a decision on the jurisdictional issue.
Since we kind of mentioned the three separate cases, is 89037 the appeal from the suspension without pay kind of moot at this point? I mean, I know that was filed, that the suspension occurred because of the indictment and then the conviction. And then there was the pardon thereafter, and everything was filed prior to that pardon, and then that suspension got kind of rescinded and the suspension with pay put in place. So is that case really even ripe for us to do anything any longer?
I think to answer your question shortly, I do think it is moot, but I do think the court, if it thinks it's something that can continue to happen, the court could still look at. And I won't spend much time on the first, what we're deeming the first appeal, 89037, except to say, yes, they have discretion. Our argument was more, our concern was more, not necessarily on the suspension of her, but the suspension without pay, because although they have discretion to do such, they never stated why. They never explained why, and if they don't explain why, we're led to not have an understanding if the decision was made arbitrary and capriciously or what their reasoning was. The salary has nothing to do with the protection of the public, right? The suspension does.
I'm sorry. Was she repaid that salary?
No, Your Honor, she was not.
So she still hasn't received the pay for that period of time?
That's correct. She was suspended for, I think it was 10 months total. Or 7 months, I may have misspoke, suspended 7 months without salary. And again, that sort of begs the question here that we have her being disciplined now for not paying back money after she was suspended for 7 months without salary. So are we going to discipline a judge that received money beforehand because maybe they can't pay now? It really could potentially open up the Pandora's box for any sitting judge, or I guess maybe any non-attorney judge, since there are no rules that give them notice of what is disciplinary, what is subject to discipline and what is not. Your Honor, with that, I'd actually, if the court would allow me, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Therese Shanks. I represent the Commission on Judicial Discipline. We ask that this court deny Appeal 89037 as moot, particularly in light of counsel's concession. We ask that this court affirm the suspension with pay in Appeal Number 90650. And we ask that this court deny as unripe the writ petition in 90810. The writ petition in particular is problematic. It asks this court to dismiss charges that do not yet exist. It asks this court to preclude an investigation at all. Judge Fiore appears to conflate discipline with investigation. These are different parts of the process. There is no discipline happening. There are no formal statements of charges that have been filed. This court has repeatedly refused to pre-screen commission investigations of complaints against judges. That refusal is based on the post-Whitehead constitutional amendments, which vest the commission with the discretion and the obligation to investigate complaints. That refusal is also based upon the practical reality that if this court is to grant the writ in this case, it will establish a precedent whereby every judge who does not want to be investigated will file a writ with this court to block it. This court's docket will become inundated because the commission investigates hundreds of complaints a year. Judge Fiore conceded in her opening argument that the fact that she was found guilty by a jury of 7 felonies while she was sitting as a justice of the peace is a basis for discipline. She conceded that. But now she argues that the commission cannot investigate that fact. And she does so on the premise that the judicial discipline code only allows investigation of a violation of the law if there is, quote unquote, a conviction. That is not what the canon of judicial conduct says. Canon 1, Rule 1.1 states a judge shall not violate the law, and the law is not limited to criminal law. That is Canon 1. It does not require conviction.
Ms. Shanks? Under NRS 1.465, 5-5. Does the commission have the authority to instigate its own complaint?
Yes.
So what in subsection 1 says they may begin an inquiry upon receipt of a complaint? Does that imply that they'd receive a complaint or that they would generate one?
NRS section 1.4655 allows them to consider a complaint from any source. The argument that has been made about the complaint in this case is that the commission asked for it. That's not true. If you look at the commission rules, the commission receives complaints from the public in a myriad of forms. This court has in the appendix of 90650, in Appellate's appendix towards the end, the emails that the commission received following the pardon that raised very broad concern about the integrity and honesty and the character and fitness of Judge Fiore to return to the bench. And what happens when the commission receives these very broad, generalized complaints is they give it to the executive director to see if he or if there is a way that it can be narrowed into a palatable basis for investigation. That's what happens here, that the executive director is authorized to create a complaint that narrows the scope of what the commission is investigating. And that's what happened here. And if you look at that complaint in the appendix at page, it starts at page 67, and if you look at the second to last paragraph at page 69, it is clear the commission is not investigating prejudicial conduct. The jury already investigated that. They found that her prejudicial conduct was fraud and handed down that verdict while she was sitting as a justice of the peace. What the commission is looking at is her ongoing conduct as a justice of the peace since entry of that guilty verdict. And that is a basis that this court has allowed the commission to look at prior discipline of judges. Matter of Davis is a great example of that. Judge Davis in that case found out while he was seated as a judge that his use of real property was violating the zoning laws. And despite knowing that, he did not change his behavior in any aspect. And that was one of the many allegations against Judge Davis that the court addressed in that opinion. But the court held that the fact that he knew he had violated the law, he had done nothing to rehabilitate his use of that property, he had done nothing to address that violation, in and of itself was a basis for discipline under Rule 1.2. I would also like to take this moment to address the suspension with pay. That is a different inquiry than the complaint itself. The suspension with pay is done as a temporary interim measure to protect the judiciary, and it's done with pay. There were significant arguments made about the deprivation of Judge Fiore's due process rights in that hearing. The due process that is afforded to a judge in the investigation phase is severely limited under this court's opinions in Jones, which this court recently upheld in the order that came down in the Winker matter, where this court declined to require the Attorney General to represent Judge Winker in the investigation phase. Despite the limited due process that is afforded to Judge Fiore at this time, she has been given more process than she is due. She was given notice, she was given an opportunity to be heard, she was provided with everything that the commission was going to rely upon. The argument that she was not adequately instructed as to what the basis of their decision would be for her suspension flies in the face of what that order states, the notice of hearing. It states we are looking at subsection 4. We are looking at the matter of Halverson opinion, which clearly defines how the commission is to look at what constitutes a threat to the judiciary. And Halverson sets forth very, very clear standards. We have to look at, does it create a problem in the public perception that the interim service of this judge on the bench while this complaint is being pending or being investigated, does that harm the public's perception of the honesty and integrity of the judiciary?
Counsel, if Ms. Fiore were to win an election in coming up, would that alter the perception of the commission at all in terms of the public perception of her as a judge?
No.
So she won her election, so majority of people voted for her. Would that cut against the public perception argument?
No. And this is an issue that was raised regarding the emails as well. Judge Fiore would ask this court to establish precedent that the court of public opinion trumps the legitimate complaint of one victim. That is not how it works. We do not know what the weight of that public perception is. We know that members of the public have complained that they cannot believe a sitting justice who has handed a guilty verdict while sitting of 7 felonies is allowed to return to the bench. That warrants investigation, and that is what we are at. We are at investigation. Does that warrant judicial discipline? We don't know. Judge Fiore has not responded. We have not heard her side of the story. She did not testify in her defense at her criminal trial. The commission does not know what she has been doing since that verdict came down. The commission does not know if it is ongoing conduct. It appears to be from the records available to the commission in the criminal trial. Every victim testified they had not been contacted by her for repayment. They had not been repaid. That's what the commission's looking at. Now, is that testimony true? The commission doesn't know. And that is why they asked Judge Fiore to respond. She has not responded. She filed the writ to block her response. She has an ethical obligation under the code to respond to inquiries of that nature, and she just does not want to.
Ms. Shanks, if this, just hypothetically, if this whole story arc had occurred before Judge Fiore was on the bench, so she had not taken the bench, all these things happened, and subsequent to fast forward to today, she subsequently elected to the office, it'd be your position that judicial discipline could remove her from that office?
If Judge Fiore had been found guilty before becoming a justice of the peace.
She wasn't Judge Fiore, she was Ms. Fiore, and this whole, this everything exactly happened subsequent to the pardon, subsequent, right now we're here, and she's elected to office. Is it your position that judicial discipline could then remove her from that office?
Well, we are not taking a position that judicial discipline can remove her from office today. We are investigating that. But that is not the facts of this case. The facts of this case are that she was found guilty while seated as a justice of the peace, and the commission is looking at her.
Understood. But if you could indulge my hypothetical, if it's possible. If the election happened after, so she was not a judge, would judicial discipline be able to then immediately suspend her? Certainly you can inquire, but suspend her for that situation?
It would not be able to immediately suspend her under the statutes that it suspended her under for the indictment and the verdict.
Correct. We're post-pardon, we're up right here. Except the only fact I'm changing is the fact of when she became a judge.
I think the question that would happen then is there ongoing conduct related to that as she takes the bench? That would be the only question, right? Because the commission would want to know what is she doing as a justice of the peace since that verdict. That has come up in other judicial discipline cases where a judge committed, I'm blanking on the case, it's in Arkansas, the judge committed malpractice as an attorney, took the bench, malpractice was resolved before they took the bench, and the judicial Discipline Commission in Arkansas investigated whether there was an ongoing issue with how he was handling those past clients, if he had adequately turned over client files. So it's difficult to give you a yes or no answer to that because it would be a very fact-based inquiry.
To be clear here, though, there's no allegation with respect to any improper judicial conduct by Judge Fiore.
There's not a complaint. The complaint at issue is not anything she has done from the bench, like we saw in the Halverson opinion. No. And Halverson, it brings up a point that I think is relevant in that Judge Fiore wants the pardon to block out all any consideration of the fact that this happens. And she also argues that even though the verdict came down while she was on the bench, we cannot consider the underlying conduct. That presumes that the commission would file charges against her based on conduct occurring prior to her taking the bench. And there is a difference between the acts that are charged and the facts that underlie them. If the commission is looking at her acts since becoming a justice of the peace, like they are, there is no evidence in the record that they are not, then it can consider underlying facts. This came up in the Fine opinion. I think it also might have come up in the Davis opinion, where the judges were upset that the commission had considered things that had happened prior to them taking the bench. And this court said, well, those are irrelevant to the charges that were filed. They were explanatory facts, but they're not the basis of the charges. It's not wrong for the commission to have a factual understanding of the acts which they are looking for. And that is a difference here. The fact that the conduct that she was found guilty of occurred before her taking the bench, that's a background fact. What acts she will be charged for, if any, we don't know. We know from the record that the commission specifically is investigating and has asked her specifically to respond to what she has been doing since becoming a justice of the peace, and particularly what she has been doing since a jury told her 7 times your retention of those funds was unlawful. What has she done since? That raises the question of whether a sitting judge can retain ill-gotten gains and still uphold the judicial code of conduct, which requires them to act at all times in a manner that upholds the integrity, honesty, and impartiality of the judiciary. That is Canon 1.2. She shall not act in a manner which creates or casts impropriety upon the office of judge. And to the extent that there have been arguments that that is an unclear, undefinable canon, that that allows the commission to discipline at their whim for whatever they want with shifting winds, that is not true. Ethical violations are fact-based inquiries. It is impossible to define them with statutory precision. For that reason, courts create guidelines and factors for courts to consider, and there are clear guidelines and there are clear factors that the commission must consider in our Code of Judicial Conduct. You find them at comment 5 in section 1.2, you find them in the terminology of the Code of Judicial Conduct, and you find them in the cases that this court has issued interpreting those canons of judicial conduct. It is not unknown to Judge Fiore what the commission is looking for, and it is not unknown to her why that might be a problem. It flies in the face of logic to suggest that there might be a negative public perception if a sitting justice of the peace who is found guilty of 7 felonies is not at least investigated for that. Any member of the public might say, oh, I think we should look into that further. Are they fit to serve as a judge? Those are the emails that the commission received. And the commission took those emails and said, well, you know, let's see what she's been doing since being a justice of the peace. Pursuant to their statutes, the post-Whitehead amendments, and their rules, they authorized their executive director to file a complaint that narrowed the scope of the investigation. Judge Fiore misrepresents that because she wants this court to find that she can never be investigated. She wants this court to find that pardons are a blanket erasure of that verdict, and that is not how pardon law works in Nevada. That's not how it works in the federal system either.
So, Ms. Shanks, sorry, over here.
Yes.
Just want to clarify then what the commission's position is, right? We can all agree as a factual matter that Judge Fiore is not licensed to practice law in the state. So, given that fact, is it the position of the commission that it only has jurisdiction to look at discipline as a result of an act or omission that occurs on and after the date on which she entered her judicial office? Or is it your position that not being an attorney, it's not so limited?
The facts, the commission has no position on that because the facts of this case don't go there.
We don't need to resolve that here.
No, the facts of the, not on this record, sorry. The facts of this case, the complaint that the commission is investigating is specifically focused on her conduct since becoming a justice of the peace. That I don't believe that we argued.
So then the pardon doesn't matter because the pardon was for prejudicial crimes anyway?
Well, the pardon doesn't matter because the pardon doesn't preclude subsequent disciplinary proceedings for the same conduct.
Is this for the same conduct?
Well, the pardon is for the, it gets rid of the verdict.
Right.
So the Judge Fiore was suspended under NRS 1.4675
right.
subpart 2.
Right.
Yeah. No, the pardon would not matter, Your Honor. You're correct, because it's for her ongoing conduct post-verdict, or if the investigation reveals things she may have done related on the bench. We don't know if there's anything there. That has not been, that's why we need a response from Judge Fiore.
So then, Ms. Shanks, if prior to this proceeding that we're, this complaint that we're at, if post-pardon, Ms. Fiore had said, hey, I'm gonna, without any admission of anything, I'm just gonna repay people, because I'm gonna repay people. If that had happened, would the commission have been able to file a complaint?
Well, that supposes the commission knew about that. That your question
raises. Well,
let's
say you did. It's public. Here, I'm giving the money back, and nobody's written to you that they haven't been paid back. And so, taking that as true, would you have authority, you believe, would the commission have authority, you believe, to file a complaint at that point?
Well, the fact of the verdict still remains. So that alone would give the authority. The Feinstein case is an interesting case. We cite it in our brief. It's a State Bar of California case. In that case, the attorney was convicted of theft, and then he was pardoned. And we cite it for the effect of the pardon. But if you read the California Supreme Court goes on to discuss whether the discipline that was ultimately entered was warranted. And repayment of victims and remorse were things that the lack of reimbursement and remorse were sufficient grounds for discipline, the California Supreme Court held in that case. That is the perfect example of why these proceedings are premature, because we do not know if that's happened. This is only in an investigation phase. If that has happened, there may never be charges brought. We don't know what we don't know, because Judge Fiore has not yet responded, and that is why she was invited to respond.
And that's the quandary about all of this, right? Is that we're in an investigative phase and we don't have a formal statement of charges. I mean, any member of the public, regardless of our ethical obligations as attorneys, can make a complaint. And I don't think, and either side can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know that there's any authority that dictates what the commission has to tell somebody in terms of seeking a suspension, other than you've got 7 days, you've got an opportunity to be heard, and we're going to have a hearing. Formal statement of charges is different. That requires more specificity to focus what it is, and then I think the court or anybody might be in better position to decide whether jurisdiction was appropriate, discipline was appropriate, anything.
Yes, Your Honor, you're correct. The limited due process for the temporary suspension is exactly that: notice, opportunity, there's a complaint. The statutes, NRS 1.4683, require the complaint to be kept private from the judge and from the public, unless and until a decision is, they decide that the judge
yeah,
should
that's
respond.
That's always been frustrating for judges.
Yes.
So, Ms. Shanks,
we know nothing about.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Just before we run out of time, I want to make sure I ask. So, assuming that judicial discipline can proceed with their investigative process and decide whether or not to bring charges, there's still the fact of the suspension while that process goes on, and which is only permitted to happen if the judge poses a substantial threat of serious harm to the public or to the administration of justice. Can you articulate for me what that substantial threat is?
Yes, it's at page 5 of the suspension order. It is evidence of respondent's dishonesty and retention of funds maintained under false pretenses reveals a current emergent threat to the judiciary and requires the commission to impose interim suspension to protect against anticipated future harm, including harm to the public's perception of the judicial system. The commission goes on to explain the continuing deceit of charitable donors and unjust enrichment at the expense of the slain police officer statue harms the public's perception of the judicial system and its confidence in the system's legitimacy, creates the appearance of impropriety, reflects adversely on respondents' honesty and character, and undermines her ability to impose justice and to apply the law fairly. This is illustrated with emails from members of the general public calling into question respondents' honesty and ability to perform the duties of justice of the peace. Thank you.
I would like to start with the first thing that counsel had talked about, which was that the court should be concerned that this will continue to come up before the court every time a judge is upset about a pending investigation. That's not true. This case here is very specific to a jurisdictional issue. If we did not have this jurisdictional issue that needed to be determined prior to this case moving forward, we would not have been here before you. So jurisdiction is why the writ was filed, to stop something from happening. And as I argued previously, jurisdiction is not going to be determined by having a disciplinary hearing. We are not going to know any additional facts. And ultimately, we're going to end up before this court again arguing the same thing.
Well, Ms. Armeni, we don't know if there are going to be charges filed or not. And we don't know what those charges will be based on or not, whether they'll be based on prejudicial conduct or post-judicial conduct, do we?
Well, I think they've argued, I think I wasn't able to count the amount of times that guilty verdict was said during that argument.
Yes.
But we need to refocus on the fact that in the suspension order, they specifically rescinded the suspension of Judge Fiore based on the guilty verdict.
Right.
So when I talk about pivoting, the commission continues to pivot. They attempt.
I would say the presidential pardon sort of changed the landscape, wouldn't you think?
I would, but then they continue, understood, and that's why they rescinded based on the guilty verdict. But yet they're still saying the guilty verdict, the guilty verdict, the guilty verdict.
Okay.
And even though now we are suspended under a different subsection, if they really thought that the guilty verdict was a basis to suspend her, they would have left her suspended under subsection 2.
So,
but they shifted to
subsection. With respect to my question, which is we don't know yet if there will be charges brought and what conduct those charges might be based on if they are brought, doesn't that suggest that we should wait and see if that's going to happen? Because even your jurisdictional argument is as to prejudicial conduct. And ultimately, if there's a charge based on post-judicial conduct, then that might not be subject to your jurisdictional objection.
And Your Honor, I think based on the conduct of the commission thus far, I don't necessarily have faith that it's not going to come back. It would be surprising if they did not find some sort of discipline.
But why not let the investigation process, like under Jones, right? We said it was premature. Why not allow the investigatory process to go forward, and so that if there is a potential threat to the public, that can't be investigated?
Because I think different than Jones, a lot of the conduct was when Jones was on the bench. He was a sitting judge.
But we don't know if they're investigating whether or not there is conduct that took place while she was on the bench. We just heard counsel say that we are specifically looking at conduct as a sitting judge.
Right, and I think that the conduct, where I'm going off the notice they've provided, right? Everything points to the prejudicial conduct that they keep looking to, and then this idea of not repaying the donors. That's what their potential discipline
And you're saying they don't have the right to investigate
what
happened while she was on the bench?
I think that when you bootstrap it to the criminal case here, the criminal case and the conduct that happened during the criminal case was pre-judge conduct. Yes, that's where I think the jurisdictional argument is. Had she been on the bench when the conduct occurred, I think that's a different story and maybe a different argument for sure. But I think the complaint is not based on those emails that were submitted. They were based on the criminal case. It says in the notice, we are looking at the action of the criminal case. It was not based on the 9 emails that were negative. And to say that she's a threat to the public denies the 180 letters on her behalf that were submitted by Tick Segerbloom, Bob Coffin, other people in the state, and even more importantly, an attorney that practices before her in Pahrump. Again, this is not about judicial performance. So the commission continues to ignore and saying that she's a threat based on the criminal case and then these 7 emails, rather than looking at the 180 letters, including from the Nye County commissioners who appointed her and who stuck by her. They appointed her after the search warrant was executed on her house. She was elected by overwhelming population during the primary after the execution of the search warrant, and the Nye County Commissioners continue to support her even after the guilty verdict.
But when we look at complaint as it's defined, it's not what we typically think of as complaint, right?
Yes.
Under 1.4263, it means any information in any form and from any source that alleges or implies judicial misconduct or incapacity. So if judicial discipline has a concern, they should have the ability to investigate, right? They can't weigh out the credibility of the 7 people who sent emails and the 180 people without doing an investigation.
But if you actually look at the letters, they're based on them being upset that she got a pardon. They're not about her performance on the bench and that they have concerns about her being a judge. It's based on their upset of the criminal case and the pardon. And so you have to juxtapose that with people that actually are in Pahrump, that are appearing before her when you're making a decision whether she's a threat.
But isn't that what happens as a result of the investigation and the decision whether to bring formal charges?
Well, I think they already took that into consideration when they determined that she was a substantial threat and suspended her. Okay, thank you. We would ask that this court find that there is no jurisdiction.
Thank you. All right. Interesting issues. Thank you to both sides for your arguments today. Very well done, as well as the briefing. These 3 cases are going to stand submitted to the court, and we will be in recess until further call of the court. Thank you.
All rise.